Welcome to Between the Worlds, a podcast where we look at tarot, magic, and witchcraft through a mytho-poetic lens. I'm your host, Amanda Yates Garcia. Welcome, listeners, to the penultimate episode of Between the Worlds. We're mixing it up a bit today and bringing you the King of Wands, the freedom fighter who uplifts our community, heals shame, and helps us overcome our resistance to change. We have a very special guest with us today, Christopher Marmolejo, author of the book Red Tarot. I think this conversation will have you thinking of the King of Wands, maybe even the tarot, maybe even your life, life in general, in a radical, joyful new way. I know you're going to love it, so stay tuned. That song was by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, Dear Witches of the World. Before we get started today, there are hot things that I want to share with you, my dear lovers of magic. First of all, remember way back in 2020, of course, who could forget 2020? Carolyn, the producer of this podcast, and I had a super special guest on the show for our episode on the Three of Cups. That was Jade Chang, who is not only one of our dearest friends, but who is also a celebrated writer, novelist, and writer of TV shows as well. Jade has just come out with another book called What a Time to Be Alive. It's about healing from grief, professional jealousy, complicated friendships, and trying to make sense of this chaotic world of ours. And it's also hilarious, set in the all too familiar demimonde of Los Angeles wellness gurus and Insta celebrities. The details in this book will have you laughing with familiarity and crying because you feel so seen. In short, you need to grab a copy of this book. Even people who don't live in LA will chuckle alongside this beautiful, heartbreaking, brilliant book. We'll put the links for the book in the show notes, and yeah, go out and buy that book, babes. Ooh, also, and here's a good one, Carolyn, our beautiful producer, has a new album out called Spellbreaker. We're going to put the link in the show notes, so don't forget about Spellbreaker. Okay, third fun thing before we dive into the show. Y'all know that I have a Substack community called Mystery Cult, where I lead monthly full moon rituals and tarot study classes and things like that, right? Well, I've also been leading retreats for folks who want the full immersive ritual experience. And the next retreat is coming up on winter solstice from December 19th to the 22nd. It's called Bright Night Magic, the Wisdom of the Crone. And we'll be practicing the rituals of the crone to summon your inner elder who will help you choose the path leading to your most resonant future and our collective most resonant future. We'll be engaging in process work to release blocks that prevent us from hearing our own inner guidance. And we'll explore storytelling with mythic elders like Hecate, Baba Yaga, Caradwyn. We'll also be discovering the bespoke medicine only offered to those who make time to work with these spirits closely. This retreat will be especially helpful for people like therapists and other healers who want to bring more ritual into their work, artists and creatives who want to deepen their practice by working with these guides, practitioners of earth-centered spirituality seeking resilience and inspiration, folks in transformation ready to grow and greet change with integrity. All of you will get a lot out of this work. So come to the snowy San Gabriel Mountains of Southern California with us this December. Leave the noise of the world behind for a few days and take some time to build a relationship with the wise elder within you. There's only, I think, 2 spots left for this retreat. So now is the time to commit to your crone, friends. I'd love to see you there. The links are in the show notes. Please do join me and see you there in the snow, in the place of elder witch wisdom. Okay, Carolyn and I will be doing short witchy performances at the book launch of another friend, Brooke Palmieri, at the Philosophical Research Society on Tuesday, October 14th. Listeners of Between the Worlds will love Brooke's book, Bargain Witch, Essays in Self-Initiation, all about occult history, queer futures, and retakes of the classical witch studies figures, such as Tituba, and reflections on Rachel Pollack. I mean, what's not to love? Link is in the show notes. Okay, so before we jump into the King of Wands, I have to admit a little snafu. So as many of you know, I am engaged in this PhD program right now at UCLA, and it's really kicking my butt. It is not easy to be a full-time student and be a teaching assistant, which often requires up to 20 hours a week of labor, plus to run my own full-time business, doing the work of high priestessing, basically, and writing on my Substack and working with my community. It's a lot. And in addition to having a lot of dirty dishes and hair in the corners of my house, I also I've been taking a long time to get these episodes out to you, for which I apologize. Now, in this case, the reason I'm even bringing this up is not to embarrass myself with my dirty dish scenario, but more because it took a really long time to get this episode out with Christopher Marmolejo. In fact, I think it's taken about a year to do this. And Carolyn and I have both been really busy. Carolyn also has a really hot art career. She's doing really well with all of her work and is really busy writing operas and, you know, performing in amazing places. But yeah, so it's taken us a year to get this out. And in the year that it took, I kind of forgot some of the things I'd said in the earlier episode. And so there's a little kind of weird, wiggly confusion that I want to explain to you before we enter into this discourse about the King of Wands. So for reasons that are sometimes mysterious to me, I just really enjoy using the Thos deck to talk about some of the court cards, the court cards being the cards that are like the knight, the queen, the king, the page, typically. But one of the problems with the Thoth deck is that it exchanges or displaces or wiggles around with the king and the knight. So in the Thoth deck, what is typically known as the king in most decks, or in like classical decks, like the Rider-Waite Coleman Smith. Crowley, who created this deck, didn't think of the king as powerful. He thought of the king as like kind of a weakened form, because the knight was active and Crowley was all about that action, right? He wanted the knight to be like a virile, you know, riding on his stallion, you know, charging into the fracas kind of guy. So he sort of demoted the king to the prince. The knight acts like the king. My point is, friends, that when I talk about the king in the Thoth deck, sometimes I talk about it as the prince, and sometimes I talk about it as the knight. Let's just make it simple for everyone. When I'm talking about the king, the knight, or the prince in this episode, I'm pretty much talking about the king as we understand him from the more classical decks. In enclosure, it's all about the king today. You're going to know so much about the king by the end of this, and I think you're going to love it. So let's just go dive in, shall we? Okay, we're ready to talk about the card. I'm looking at the King of Wands right now from the Thoth deck. Remember, in this deck, the card is actually called the Knight of Wands for complicated reasons, but it correlates to the King of Wands in most decks, so let's just go with that. In this image, we see the king astride a black stallion. What immediately catches the eye is that although the king and the horse look like they're charging towards something, the composition is actually flipped so that it reads as if they're moving backwards. So they have this backward-forward feeling about them. And it gives the sense there's some kind of reversal going on, maybe like an AC/DC-style current charge. The king carries a huge club of blazing flames, vital, hot, throbbing, electric. The wand from the Ace of Wands, like a thunderbolt, like Carolyn's music, like a torch to light the master's house on fire. He has a cape of flames and hair winding around him like flames. And he's wearing armor that looks like the scales of a snake, something that sheds, that rebirths, that transforms. This is a personage who embodies the transformative power of heat and light. When he enters your reading or your life, buckle up and get ready to ride. Things are about to take off for you. In the Hermetic system, this king has the title of the Lord of Flame and Lightning, King of the Spirits of Fire, King of the Salamanders. He's the fiery part of fire, a roaring inferno. And the card, this king, corresponds most often to the sign of Sagittarius, sometimes Mars and Sagittarius. Mars being will and power and action, and Sagittarius being the visionary philosopher, the nomadic sage moving through the deserts carrying their wisdom, the learned provocateur of action and inspiration. When this card comes up in a reading, it's calling you to action. It's saying, wake up, go forth, say yes. That's the obvious directive. But there's a bit more nuance to it. The King of Wands is wise, but he's also in connection with the genus Loki, the spirits of place. He's thinking seven generations into the future. He's heeding the lessons of the ancestors. Be confident, move forward, he's saying, but don't forget what you've learned. commit to your integrity. For instance, let's say you get this card in a reading and a new lover has come into your life. The King of Wands is bringing the heat. It's hot. It's passionate. It looks like a go. But remember to stay true to yourself as you ride the winds of passion. Think what you want down the line. Set your boundaries. Remember your past missteps and don't be afraid to change old patterns. If, let's say, this king comes up in a career reading, this card is calling for confidence from you, saying keep a positive attitude. Remember your why. Remember your sense of purpose. Even if you aren't that excited about getting a job, which let's face it, most of the time we're not that excited to get a job. Remember that you're doing this to take care of yourself and the people that you love. Remember your why. Remember what your ultimate goal is. That's what the King of Wands is asking you. Creatively, this card asks you to be bold. Bolder even than that. Risk saying yes to your vision. And if this card comes up in a reading about how you can be of service to the world, you're being called to inspire people to action joyfully, with passion. Political activism doesn't have to be miserable. Above all, this card reminds us, remember what you're fighting for. Your sense of purpose will fuel you. You are an unstoppable flame. The forces of liberation are rising in us all now. Let's go see what our guest has to say about all this. I am so excited to introduce you to our guest for our show today, Christopher Marmolejo, a brown, queer, and trans writer, diviner, and educator who works with students around the world to plant and nurture the seed of a divinatory practice, weaving tarot and astrology and curanderissimo into fields of emancipatory possibility. I'm obsessed with Christopher's book, The Red Tarot, A Decolonial Guide to Divinatory Literacy, which reveals tarot as a tool for liberation. What I particularly adore about this book is that it weaves critical race theory, queer theory, and other emancipatory frameworks like those advocated by luminaries such as bell hooks, Toni Morrison, Paulo Freire, Jose Esteban Munoz, with mythologies that decenter white narratives, bringing in references from Hinduism to the Aztec pantheon. Every serious devotee of tarot should have this book on their shelves. What I also adore about Christopher, which might surprise you given their rigorous academic pedigree, is that they're also just a super fun, kind, adorable person. Like, literally, I truly cannot wait for you to meet them. So let's go find them and walk into the fires of the King of Wands together. Hey, Christopher, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. It's an honor to be here. Such an honor.
Yeah, we knew we were wrapping up the show, but we wanted to make sure that we got you on before we closed out. So we're like, how can we get Christopher on the show? So I'm not sure that like King of Wands would have been the one that like we would definitely associate with you and your work, but you go so comprehensively into all of the cards in your book that it seems like it doesn't really matter so much.
I was excited. I was excited.
I'm really curious how you first became interested in witchcraft, magic, and tarot. It sounds like you have like an academic background in education or decolonial studies, so...
Yes, I have a master's in education, and that was focused on critical pedagogy, but like decoloniality and like a revolutionary classroom, right? And my first interest in, I mean, I've always known I was a Scorpio. I didn't know I had a Scorpio stellium, but I feel like Scorpios are just born into the occult, born knowing. And I would say it was a mix from both of my grandparents in being supporters, where my maternal grandmother, I just have like fond memories of her taking me to the bookstore and I just naturally finding myself to the occult section, perusing those aisles, getting astrology books and not knowing at all what the complex chart calculations meant, but still being drawn to learning about the zodiac and reading about the signs. And then with my paternal grandmother, we grew up in Muskoy, which is like this kind of dirt land, vast expanse, and horses next door in the back. I just had a lot of spaciousness in the environment. I was alone a lot. I read a lot, and there was an intimate communion that I was able to develop as a child, where I was just able to try and summon wind and admire horses and be in contemplation. And I think that the confluence of literacy was there, also, again, like an environmental relationship that I was just able to explore very personally, very independently. And then likewise, grew up really next to and with access to, but not formally recognized as a citizen of the Serrano Nation, but like with family there. And so there was the market awareness of indigeneity as well within my upbringing that I feel is foundational to, to who I am now, is like part of the makeup. So, and then at when I was teaching formally for like my first year, middle school, 7th grade English, 7th and 8th grade English in Santa Cruz, was it coincided with my Jupiter return. And I have Solution, or however you pronounce that star in the dolphin constellation, under my Jupiter. And so that is a very psychic star. And so like at that moment, I really began taking tarot much more seriously in a personal learning. And it's so they kind of were running parallel, my teaching and my own deepened commitment to prophecy. And then at a certain point, they converged more explicitly.
It's so wonderful to meet a fellow stellium and Scorpio. I always just resonate with Scorpios and their ability to go so deeply. We both have that. We both share that, and the love for the occult and the willingness to dive into the lands of the oracular, the depths. I could just sit there talking about that with you all day, but I do want to dive into the topic of today's show, which is the King of Wands. But before we really focus on the King of Wands, I'd love to discuss with you a little bit about the kings in general and the court cards in general. So, when kings come up in a reading, what do you feel like the invitation is for the court? Like, what are they getting at?
So, I mean, of course, depends on the position in the spread, the context in terms of like, is this in the position of signifier for the querent, which is how I always start my readings personally, and is it in a vice position or perhaps in a temporal position, right? Like, what is behind them, what's ahead of them, in that sense, and so that depends in terms of, how I'm going to interpret that king. Generally, if I see a court card, like especially the king or queen, as representative for the as a signifier for the querent, I feel so like I'm like nice. It's a strong position. I feel that's a strong reflection of where they're at. There's a sense of autonomy, a sense of authority and ownership, and a sense of virtuosity, which I'm trying to say instead of mastery, over kind of the realms and the things associated with that particular like suit or element that that court card may be bringing in, right? And so, yeah, again, virtuosity, authority, maturity. In the advice position, it may be about dealing with someone in that position, or again, embodying, like stepping up, like taking the reins a bit more, right? And then of course, yeah, it can depend about the nature of the question, the people in their lives, their own sort of natural disposition, and then perhaps spell working, ancestral working, an elemental relationship that can be enlivened via the elemental court that is particularly represented.
Yeah. So, how are you seeing the difference, though, between like the king and the queen, or the king and the knight, or the king and the page, because I think that's something that people get really confused about with the court cards. I mean, it's easier when it's something like the page, which is like a child version or like a beginning version. But then with the king and the knight, sometimes that can be confusing. And then they're also interchanged in some systems, like in the Thoth deck where the knights are the princes, which I think makes people kind of raise an eyebrow. And then because we have this beautiful evolving understanding of gender and like an expansiveness around gender, I think that a lot of us are trying to redesign, reevaluate, re-envision what the difference between the kings and the queens are. So I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Absolutely. I mean, the court cards are fascinating. They are certainly harder for people to learn and like relate to. And so I recently just did like the first iteration of my Paper Crowns class, which is focused on the court cards explicitly. And I love this question. I do love the court cards. I have a great relationship with all of them. In Red Tarot, I discuss like the emperor and sort of analyzing the problem of monarchy and divine right and the confrontation with hegemony, right? And so I maintain the gendered aspects of the cards, and then I push against them like in a multivalent way. So I've had a female client come, and I pulled the King of Pentacles for her, and that was her signifier. And I was like, okay, great. This is a person who is making money, who is, again, skilled in their craft, who has authority, who is like building a life of value, like established an accordant life of value. And they were a teacher of teachers. Like they weren't just a teacher, but they were a teacher of teachers. And they had recently had a salary increase and all the things, and was presenting and reflecting them in a more masculine understanding of that, of what that means historically, and empowering them. And there was also considerations of how that greater material power was criticized or pushed back against by her family. You know, it was something that she had to negotiate. And then likewise, I had another client, a gay male client, and he had gotten the Queen of Pentacles in the position of advice. And we spoke about kind of wives and sexual labor and whores and kind of like Anne Boleyn, you know, in the sense of she worked it. Like, you know what I mean? Like working within a context of being able to bring gender into consideration of the contexts of power, and then confronting hegemonic masculinity, hegemonic femininity. I see the queens. So that's in a perhaps a societal scope of analysis that I'm providing for the client. But then internally, the queens for me are this internal autonomy and realization, like really attending to an internal landscape of like here I am arriving into a fullness of self. And then the kings become about an external responsibility and orientation towards students, towards the community that they're involved in, towards their family or whatnot.
Yeah. So before we go on, I want to just break down for listeners out there who maybe aren't as familiar with the word hegemony. So just briefly, hegemony is the cultural aspects of power and how they're implemented. So often hegemony is power exerted that's through, let's say, visual media or through literature or through signs or through essentially forms of kind of soft power. That's how I understand it. Is there anything that you would want to add to that?
I love that. I would just say thinking of like who has the flag and what is on that flag, this game of capture the flag that various subsets are competing for at any given time. So it's like who is in power, and then how are they representing that power?
Yeah, like the dominant power structures essentially is what you're referring to. Yeah. So I love, and I also share this idea that the kings are, I think of them as elders. So I think of them as like holding knowledge and vision and space for future generations. And they can be in their most exalted nature and their most expressed, expansive nature, their elders that are stewards of the future generations. They're caring for them. They're looking out for like how to make the world better for them, passing on knowledges to them and lineages to them. And they're also caring for the knowledges of past generations and holding those liturgies. In its shadow form, then I feel like they're like the worst of, you know, kind of like what memes say about boomers. I don't want to be, it's like not all boomers are bad. I know, I recognize this. But I mean like the kind of hegemonic power structures that we see right now of like older people, you know, who are maybe in their 70s, who are recklessly destroying their planet, like indenturing students, doing all this stuff to future generations because they're like, well, I've got mine, so it doesn't really matter. So that's kind of the negative aspect of the kings, in my opinion. And then I see the queens as like looking inward, and that like they don't work so much for external validation, but instead they're connecting to source and inspiration and the other world and the imagination to bring something forth into the world. At least that's how I see the difference. I wonder how you see the difference between the knight and the kings.
I love what you said as well. I will say as well, for my personal practice, like I definitely relate to the kings and queens as embodiments or emanations of that element even itself. Like, I know we will get to the King of Wands, but I see that as just the ancestor of fire, like fire itself, like fire is an ancestor. And it gives me a face in the king that I can just, my mind can talk to a bit more, you know, in a different aspect. The knights I see as practitioners. Knights sort of mediate the kings and the pages in a developmental process. They're out in the world. They're typically oath-bound. They're highly trained, highly skilled. They're in pursuit of a goal, but they're more independent. They're emissaries of the kingdom that they're, you know, representing in essence. In the world of the tarot, there's a whole host of characters that you might not know who you're going to interact with. But generally, I tell clients, you know, when you see a knight, you can feel more safe. You know what I mean? Like there's like generally it's a good thing to see a knight in terms of like they're not perhaps going to attack you, you know, unless you're on a contrary force in a sense. But like typically this is a person who is honor bound and who is in pursuit of something by higher principle, where the king may be more on the throne, more global, already arrived in a sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. You gave me a flash of insight that maybe the king is literally the ancestors, right? Like it's the collective, like fire as ancestor, the fire that runs through us. And then the knight I always see is like, yeah, taking action. I see knights as lovers and I see knights as friends. Like the one who is, we are in a romance with, the one who is showing up with us, the one who is taking action. And I also see them as pollinators, like taking energy out, pulling energy in. So they're definitely travelers and moving around in a way that I see the kings as much more like mountains or something. They're there, they're stable, they're not really moving anywhere. You know, they're deeply rooted in place and connected to, like, that's why I was saying ancestor, like that deep, deep, deep time, deep power source. Yeah, I mean, you say a lot of really amazing things about kings in your brilliant book, Red Tarot, which we will talk about at length, and which everybody, please run out and get this book. So some of the things you say about kings are that they're teachers of cultural work, that they are fathers who teach us freedom and survival, which you contrast with mothers. Father teaches you freedom and survival, and mother teaches you home and belonging. Neither is gendered, and both exist within you. So that idea of father teaching you to be free in the world, be active in the world, find your liberation, and to provide for yourself. I'm just going to say a few more things that you say in your text, and then we can unpack it together. So you also say of kings that they are custodians of history, not owners, which I understand you meaning that they are, as we were saying, like elders, keepers, like keepers of those lineages. You say that kings are aspects of the emperor, and it's even in the chapter four, which so you do this interesting thing with the chapters of your book where you go according to number. So you have all the fours in the deck, then all the kings, and then the emperor. So you're kind of aligning or corresponding across or kind of diagonally across the tarot, which I love. It's such a brilliant scheme. And finally, you say that king is, when you pull a king, that you, it's a sign that you're confronting dominant power ideologies and apparatuses. So you need to find your principles within that and speak truth to power, it seems like. I know that was a lot. I'm sorry. I just like piled up all the things from your book, which is so rich and dense, but
I love it. Dealing with the king, I mean, they become, I think the court is hard for people because there's been a separation of just appreciation or understanding about like the portraiture that has typically historically only been afforded for the powerful. And so what does it mean to try and look and find a reflection of ourselves as the tarot is a type of a mirror for a client that is dispossessed? You know, and like bridging that can unpack and unearth the internalization of that colonizing force, that colonizing ideology, white supremacy, you know, internalized homophobia, internalized racism, right? And then at the same time, I think of Las Meninas, of course, the classic by Velázquez, and the construction of that and how there's the mirror of the, there's like the mirror that is like optically incorrect, revealing the king and the queen, but then there's also a passerby in the doorway of that piece, and that's always there's like this gaze game that is happening, and by being able to see ourselves in this portraiture, by these in these anonymous portraits of the powerful, we afford ourselves significance. We inscribe ourselves into the archive. We can realize our own agency, and at the same time, critique. You know, kings and queens, we can critique the people in power. We can understand that we may be dealing or being shown all of this propaganda by people competing for imperial power, you know, at once. And then have that in marked contrast to developing ancestral relationships and like bowing to authorities who are more ancient than us, that are primal, elemental.
It's really part of the brilliance of your work, I think, that you don't try to completely ignore or negate or bypass over this idea that, well, we are in confrontation with systems of power. We are in dialogue, whether we like it or not, with hegemonic power structures. And that tarot spirit, as a language of spirit, is inviting us to find our own power within that when the kings come up. I think a lot of the time, I see a lot of decks. Like, I don't mean to cast shade. I want, if you're out there making a deck like this, I'm not trying to be like boo on you, but I do think that a lot of decks like to think about empowerment without actually addressing the fact that, we live in a world of deeply conflicted power and, violence and assault. So we can't just pretend that that's not around and that that isn't a big part of everybody's life. Like, whether or not you care about capitalism or whatever, like, it cares about you. It's like,
Exactly.
it's got you. So, I really appreciate the way that you negotiate that sensitive area.
It's challenging. Thank you. I will say like I find that yeah, with some decks, like and that is why I maintain the language of king and queen in the book and didn't give it different languages a lot of decks do. Because it becomes a similar motive to being like colorblind, as we know, as that was an attempted strategy towards equality. And, you know, but like obviously we know that's a false strategy. You know, obviously that's been like sort of debunked as like causing more harm. And so people try and have like this genderless, it's like, no, we want to see more and we're looking in the tarot. So that means we need to see history. We need to see that gender is real. It becomes an opportunity to meaningfully engage. Like, how is gender present in this person's life rather than just acting like it doesn't exist?
Right, yeah. I think that's a really fascinating position to take, and I think it is actually ultimately very empowering because it asks the viewer to take a position rather than to just circumvent having to deal with these very like fundamental issues such as gender, such as power, such as authority, such as patriarchy. It would be nice if we could just be like, well, I don't want to deal with that right now. But it's like, well, the reason you are asking this question is because of those issues, because like all the problems in your life come from this. So let's not pretend it's not there.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. It's just like it's so, you know, this notion of trying to be apolitical is just it's just false. And that's where I encountered resistance from teachers, from so many teachers, from so many principals and educators who just try and be a disembodied head of knowledge, just teaching whatever the thing is, you know. And similarly with readers, like you can have online reader, they're engaged in commerce, they're engaged in capitalism, they're engaged in a structure. And then likewise for your client, it's generally gentler for me, even though we get deep, but helping them to see, oh, I'm being structurally informed right now. Like I have an in like this is my personal window into the structural arrangement. And that creates a bit more tactility for them to externalize, perhaps like an internalized shame, and to find solidarity or to attempt to achieve solidarity and to pursue new strategies to maneuver.
Yeah. Awen, victory to the goddess. Yeah, thank you so much for that. Well, so let's dive into the King of Wands, why we're here, our raison d'être. So when the King of Wands comes up in a reading, what do you say? What's your invitation?
I would say again that this is a person who is successfully leading a life that is passion led. Someone who's made a life by following their passion or envisioning what that life would look like. What would it look like to be at the helm, an authority in something that inspires you, that lights you up every single day. Come on, baby, light my fire. You know, I would say that there is a matured eroticism that is tied into that as well, which was, of course, is deeply tied to the Queen of Wands as well. But there is a potency, a virility to the King of Wands. I would say that there is an invitation to be agitated, to be aroused, to be curious towards a political transformation within one's self and within one's community and the world that they're engaging. And to use fire to transform mental limitations about perceived possibility. I would say that there is a person who is perhaps comfortable in the spotlight or who needs to show. Like for me, the king of like the different kings are again different realms of authority. And when the King of Wands comes up, I'm like, okay, I gotta do the thing. Like, you know what I mean? I gotta get on stage a bit. Like I gotta prove the authority in a sense in front of others.
Yeah, I love what you were saying about the elemental powers and thinking about, the King of Wands as the King of Fire. And you mentioned in Red Tarot, like how this king brings warmth. They bring light, they bring activation. So if we think of someone who is cold, and then the idea of bringing them in to the fire, bringing them around the fire where they can thaw out, where they can find that life again, where they can be re-energized and activated, inspired. I really, you know, in reading your chapter about this, it became so clear to me that the King of Wands is like a freedom fighter, is a revolutionary who is inspiring us to take action and is doing that in a very sexy way. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but I just can't help myself because I was thinking about the King of Wands. I was like, who is my, you know, pop cultural reference for the King of Wands as I was preparing for this episode today? And I thought, of course, like Che Guevara, because A, Che, so hot, right? Like, yes, very sexy. Come on.
Totally.
And I was thinking about like other, you know, freedom fighters, like, you know, Malcolm X or Nelson Mandela. But like Nelson Mandela seems more like the King of Swords to me, because he seems kind of more like intellectual or like precision speaking, whereas Che Guevara is like, you imagine him someplace very hot and it's sweaty.
Yes.
He's out there like in the jungles, like with his rifle and his cigarette and his like many lovers, and he's a doctor. He's really, you know. I also thought of Chuck D, who also though seems more like a Capricorn to me, although he is actually a Leo. And Che Guevara is a Taurus, which I see, right? That's very like Venusian and like erotic. We don't know what the rest of his deal is. But who do you think of?
Yeah, I love these. I mean, I was also thinking like Dedi Buckman, who was an early leader in the Haitian Revolution. He was a voodoo priest, and there was said that he presided over this spiritual religious ceremony to inspire the revolt, the slave revolt that began the Haitian Revolution. And I thought, like, isn't that the most fantastic embodiment of what I strive towards, a liberatory spirituality? It's like, this isn't just like, it's like, let us pray before we go and burn down the plantation, you know, like King of Wands.
Yeah, and really did it.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I mean, in these times, which are revolutionary times, it really makes us look to our revolutionary elders and ancestors and be like, wow, you really did that shit. Like, you went and stormed the Bastille, you like burned down the plantation, you like went to prison for this. Because you see like how much courage it takes. And so in the King of Wands, there's that gumption, there's that willingness not just to talk, but also to fight on behalf of your community. I also was thinking about, I don't know if you know this songwriter, but or this band. Do you know the band Gogol Bordello?
No, I don't.
Well, it's kind of a group effort with people from all over, but the lead singer, Eugene Hutz, is from Ukraine. And why I think he's so King of Wands is because he's always in these like crazy outfits, like tiger pants and banana shirts. And he like performs like you cannot believe. I mean, talk about a front man. He's up there just like baring his chest and getting everybody to dance. And I feel like there's something like that in the King of Wands, who is like calling forth the energy from the crowd, like a rock star, you know, like getting them to be like, now you sing, or, you know, like getting everybody to thump and pump. And
totally. Exactly. I mean, there is there's a real like performer quality to the King of Wands. Like, he can perform. Like, he certainly he can perform in all the ways.
In all the ways.
He's got a big wand.
Yes, he's got a big wand. He does. Well, so, you know, it's funny because the next question that I wanted to talk with you about anyway was about the correspondences for the King of Wands. So the King of Wands is known in the Hermetic system as the Prince of the Chariot of Fire. You'll remember that the kings are princes in that system because it corresponds with the Thoth deck. And then astrologically, generally, in the Hermetic system, kings correspond to mutable signs, so that would be Sagittarius, although in some systems it's like Mars in Leo, which I know you favor the King of Wands as a Leo. And then I'm looking at like the Prince of Wands here, I'm showing it to you, which is from the Thoth deck, as the Prince of Wands, and it's the king in a radiant solar crown on a chariot of fire being drawn by a big male lion. So how do you interpret astrological correspondences? Do you use them?
For the court, I do kind of have my own, like I pivot than some of the other systems, but I especially use like the decanic associations for the minor and layer that on, and that's like a really rich part, I would say, of my practice. And so, and I will adjust to the deck. Like if a deck really specifies like, okay, we're aligning this correspondence in particular, then I'll work with that. But for me, generally, I see the kings as fixed, like the fixed signs, which for the reasons that we were speaking about earlier, like this more enduring quality, the queens is more cardinal, the knights is mutable just because they're in motion. So that just makes more sense to me, like this changeability.
It does make more sense. It just makes more sense. But I mean, I sometimes switch back and forth, like depending on each one, you know, it's nice to have a system to be like, it's always like this. But in the traditional system, it doesn't always fit. It doesn't feel right to me. So I feel like the king should be fixed as well. But so Leo in that case would be King of Wands.
So yeah, Leo for me. And I mean, I could see Sagittarius, like, and there are even moments in a reading where I'm like, okay, normally I would read this as Leo or something, but, or Cancer or whatever, but like, it's just not giving that today. You know, it's giving something else.
But I feel like that's how we tap into oracular energy, is when we listen for that message that's like, I'm hearing Sagittarius. It's just coming through right now. And so it's not so much about what's in the rule book or what's in the little white book, but what energy you're feeling in that moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But so how do you understand like Leo or Sagittarius in relation to this card?
With Leo, I mean, it's fire. Fire as well, right? Which is the elemental as well, like adding that on, which I know is a little bit different, but that feels so Leo as well to me, like the sun at the center, like the sun that warms everyone, the sun that has an all-seeing kind of mode. I think about each of the court cards as well as like the sovereigns being succeeding the trials of the minor journey, you know, and the Leo cards are the 5, 6, and 7 of wands. And so there's a contest of power, there's a negotiation of space, there's an ascent to power, and then there's also an ability to rally, to be self-reliant, to be a contester to power. Leo has a drama, has a certain, like the king is an idea that rallies the people around as well. You know, it's like if the king is healthy, then the nation's healthy and all that, all those notions. Leo is this one that mediates, is a bridge between the social, the larger, the historical, and the personal. And then Sagittarius as very philosophical, you know, very ideological. I like to think of Sagittarius and Pisces as the gospel. Like Sagittarius is the gospel, where it's like, and whether it's religious or not, but it's like, hey, have you heard about Mariah Carey? Like, you know what I mean? Like, let me play you this song here to like just put you on. And then like, you know, Pisces is like the choir gospel singing the Mariah Carey song.
Have you heard the good news?
Have you heard? Yes, exactly. Yeah. Let me knock, knock on your door. Let me play the boombox, you know? And there's an aspect, there's a preservation of the light, of course, with Sagittarius, you know, through the winter, there's a marathon quality. There's a big goal, a larger than life goal that the body is often like, girl, what did you sign me up for? Like, I need water. I need a rest. Like, I don't know if I can make it. Very never ending story. Kind of a motifs I find in the Sagittarius cards, which are the 8, 9, and 10 of wands. So there's different aspects, but again, I do see the king as like overseeing the whole suit.
Maybe we could say that the King of Wands is Sun in Leo trine Mars in Sag or Mars in Leo, Sun in Sag. Kind of a trine between the two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of Sagittarius too as more in their humor, like more in a sense of humor than Leo a little bit, like kind of a joker, a practical joker, and also like an adventurer and a medicine bringer, healer, like and something of a nomad. And then of course Leo is like the champion and the heart bearer, the one in the limelight and the storyteller. So
even you saying that really does have, like, in terms of who else I was thinking for my examples with, like, maybe Dedi Buckman, the Sag King of Wands, like, because Jupiter brings a spirituality, you know, a spiritual leadership, a humor, a lightness, but then the champion, I was thinking also of Muhammad Ali.
Ooh,
for the King of Wands.
Yeah.
And like there's this picture of him, well, there's a series done but by Gordon Parks, who I also see, like him taking on reporters and interviewers and just like all the cameras around him, and he was the champ and converted to Islam and resisted the draft. Like he very much like converged a politicism with his masculinity with a strong ideological stance in the public eye.
Yeah. And like, I always remember that talk where he's like, why would I go kill brown people in another country when like, I don't even have rights here. And yet he was this like hero, this like worshipped figure. And he really used it for good, at least publicly. I don't know what his private life was like, but yeah, that's a great example. I love that example. Floats like a butterfly, stings like a bee. That's how exactly. we can think of the King of Wands. So what about shadow sides of the King of Wands? Like we've sold the King of Wands for sure. We're like, everybody's like, I want to get the King of Wands. What could go wrong?
Oh my gosh, certainly. Okay, personally, we'll say like at a personal level, perhaps someone who is a womanizer, you know, an angry person, a volatile person, someone who is domineering, burnout as well, right? Like this internal, well, there's an imbalance of fire in expression. Again, fire relating to eroticism, to virility, to being able to harness a communal anger towards a sustained political action and vision. And that being in a shadow side, again, is you're burning the wrong people, you're burning those close to you, you're burnt out. You have rashes, something physically through the, you know, a disparate fire temperament. And then I think, you know, more largely like this, an imperial gaze, which I do think of in particular more heavily with the King of Swords and the King of Wands in particular. I guess the more like yang of the kings, which is like the overseer at the plantation. Drone technology, that mode that tries to conquer the map, you know, it's definitely the shadow of these kings.
Yeah, like that that energy of conquest. And then thinking, when you say overseer, it reminded me of Paulo Freire's work around the overseer, where he says that Paulo Freire, for those of you out there listening, is a like revolutionary educator. And he says that sometimes the people who are in an oppressed class and they're seeking to get out of that class, and so they might be promoted, quote unquote, to the position of like overseer of the laborers or the enslaved people or the people working on the plantation, and be more harsh to those people than the even like the dominant, you know, like the quote-unquote masters or the oppressors, because it's a way of like rejecting what one was or the position that one was in, and also like distancing oneself from the oppression. And that gets to, I think, for me, one of the main shadow sides of the King of Wands, which you highlight so beautifully in your book, which is the idea of shame. And, you know, shame is something that's really difficult to hold, right? So shame is like one of the hardest feelings to feel. And so people will do almost anything not to feel it. And I feel like, you know, when speaking to the idea of like womanizer, you know, a lot of people who are exploitive in their sexuality hold a lot of shame. That's why they're doing it, because they project their own feelings of shame onto the people that they are attracted to and then punish them for it, right? Or exploit them for it. And so, you know, you really speak to this idea of the King of Wands as someone who empowers and uplifts the people around them who are in the same struggle that they're in. Whereas if you were in a shadow version, you might punish the people who are around you or who are in your same struggle, or take your anger out on the people around you, or, you know, be loose with your shame so that you project it onto others instead of holding it yourself. I wonder how you respond to that.
Absolutely. I mean, that in hearing that just makes me think of hegemonic masculinity at the moment, in which they socialize, like men are socialized by learning to shame others. Like masculinity is brokered through humiliation rituals, you know, growing up. And like the King of Wands is certainly like on the gender spectrum, like they're very masculine, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
of the
like
kings.
Machismo. Like,
yes, machismo. Exactly that. You know, anti-fem, like homophobic, all of these things must womanize, must be like this big man, like complex, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, trying to compensate kind of energy.
Like calling people pussies and like not,
yes.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. Like, and because of their own fear of their own vulnerability. Or in order to be like, I'm not that thing that like, I'm so afraid that people will say that I am, or like, I'm not powerless. So I'm going to like, bully others.
And then spreads some burning sensation to all their partners.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, exactly.
Very much.
You know, we've mentioned what kind of person the King of Wands is, and the kinds of qualities that the King of Wands might be inviting you to live into if he comes up in the position of significator, or if he comes up in the position of gifts of self. But what if he comes up in a more confusing location? Like, you know, if you're doing the Celtic crossbred, what if he came up in the position of root, or if he came up in the position of hopes and fears or obstacle? How might we interpret that? Or how might we interpret it in a reading that isn't so much about, you know, who you might encounter or what kind of person you have to be? Like, if you're like, oh, should I move? You know, or something like that. In how should we interpret him in situations where it might be a little bit less obvious?
I love that question. This is why I love tarot, because it maintains our critical thinking abilities and imaginal qualities. You know, it's not, it's shit, like the cards shift in context. Perhaps in the root, there's something inaccessible versus like the crown position, which in the Celtic cross, which is like the power that you know you have, like with that crown, right? Like, I know I have access to this. Perhaps
this
there is an unconscious
is made
fire just under the surface,
listeners
just waiting
like
to brim.
You.
There is a sexual empowerment waiting for you to embody, to come into. You know, there's like there's a life of passion out there. Maybe the person is stuck in a job that is actually against, or at least stifling towards their feeling of being vibrantly alive in their life, in a hopes and fears position, which is like it's like such my favorite. Like that is so real. Like just that position. I have a lot of trans mask friends personally, and damn, that's hard. You know what I mean? Like because they have to negotiate masculinity, and while not being cis men, there's still movement toward like greater social power in becoming a man versus being trans femme, in which you're giving up social power to align yourself to become woman, to become femme, right? And so there's, I think, that fearful part of not wanting to cause harm in the way that men historically have under patriarchy, but then also perhaps hoping to, and also somewhat what I do in the book in terms of like, yes, I critique kings, of course, in the emperor primarily, but then wanted to envision each of the court kings as an invitation for a healthy masculinity. Like, what does healthy masculinity look like in these different realms, or as teachers, or in these positions of authority? Like, we do need to do that work as well. So perhaps that being a hope. And then maybe for somewhere like, should I move here? Like, what does it look like if I move here and the King of Wands comes up? Immediately, that just came to mind, like Hawaii or a place with a volcano, somewhere hot. You know, again, like I've drawn the court, like the Queen of Swords, like they are atmospheric. They are etheric. Like I remember drawing the Queen of Swords one day and I went to this park and it was like misty, rain, windy. And I was like, she is like, I'm in her. Like she is so here. You know what I mean? I was like, this is the Queen of Swords so much. And I was walking and I just felt so like single, but like empowered and not defined by a man. You know what I mean? And so maybe the King of Wands is just like, you'll feel hot and you know, your libido will be off the charts and you'll be sweaty and you know, you'll dance all the time or like just you'll feel that, like you'll feel in the environment of the King of Wands atmospherically.
Yeah, totally. Like the image that I'm getting actually is there. I can't remember the name of this movie, but it's like this recent like lesbian film with I can't remember their names, but Love Lies Bleeding. Yes, thank you, Carolyn. Yeah, and in it one of the characters is well it's like set in a gym basically, but it's like 1980s style kind of, and so one of the characters is always in like little gym shorts, but she's like a bodybuilder. She's always like taking tea and she's like getting super ripped. And like, there's all these like lingering, like juicy, like eroticized shots of like her like pumping weights and like close ups on her muscles and like the bulging veins in her muscles and the drips of, you know, sweat coming down. And I totally see that for this card. That's a space. That's a King of Wands space for sure. Well, so this has been such an amazing conversation, and I know that our listeners are just going to be like, "We want more. We wish you could stay forever." And I do too. But just to close out, you know, if people want to access this hot, randy, mature, vital King of Wands, Che Guevara, like spirit of revolt kind of energy. Do you have any rituals or like what, how do you do you use tarot in a ritual sense?
Definitely, definitely. I take the cards often as invitations towards my like curanderismo practices, my workings, if you will. The practice I'll share with readers is one that I do our listeners every day, sometimes multiple times a day. I have my lot of spirit in Aries. Like I said, I have a Scorpio stellium. I have Mars in Sag, so I do a lot of fire magic. I love fire magic personally, and I'd recommend a white fire limpia, which is great to cleanse the home versus a sahumerio, which is like a smoke clearing, which requires, you know, opening all the windows and the doors, and you go around and you like scrub, you know, all of your energetic space with smoke. The white fire is just cleanses everything and it does not need to be moved around, though it can be. And that is in a witch's pot that is only for these. Like, do not use one that you're cooking with, just you know, to have that there. This is part of your collection of tools, right? Some Epsom salt, a couple handfuls of Epsom salt at the base of the pot, any and all herbs, of course, have healing properties and magical properties, but especially the ones that may correlate to whatever you're working through or trying to call in. Covering that with some alcohol, like 91%, and a match. And you can learn to do pyromancy as well in this method. And that cleanses your space. You can speak into the flame. You can, that helps to transmute and alchemize what is stuck. That can dispel shadows. That can activate your decks. That's how I wake up my decks. I vivify them, keep them clean. It's how I open up class spaces, close class spaces. It's very multi-purpose. And yeah, it's really, you can really feel it. And then often, depending on the herbs you'll use, will have an aromatic quality that lingers as well.
That is great advice. That's making me want to just pop off and do that right now. So thank you so much. Yeah, I love doing those. And yeah, so we do recommend that you get a cast iron cauldron for something like that, because you don't want to cast flames all over your house. But that is
right.
Yeah,
right.
That is a really,
you got to be courageous to do, you know, a little
you
bit.
Do,
yeah.
You do. Normally, when I've done like those white fire rituals, like publicly with people, like whenever you light it, people are like, you know, they're like, oh, can you do that? Like, are we going to all blow up? And yeah, so it you do get this kind of thrill of fear, but they're pretty safe. I think they're just like lighting any other fire, as long as you're careful. Christopher Marmolejo, thank you so much for being here. It has been such a pleasure and an honor and just a joy to talk to you today. I feel like I could have so many conversations with you. Where are you based?
San Diego, California.
Oh, so we're both in California. Well, if I'm down in San Diego, yes. I want to like go get coffee with you or something.
Please hit me up. Yes, this has been a joy, and this has been vivifying after we needed to call in the King of Wands, I think, after a very shadowy week.
We need a King of Wands. Yeah, we're recording this on November 8th, so it's intense times right now. But so Christopher, where can people find you? Do you have classes coming up? I know you have your book, Red Tarot, which everybody should get. Where do you want people to follow you?
I would love if everyone followed me on my Substack, theredread.substack.com. And it's like R-E-D-R-E-A-D, you know, for red and then read. And then likewise, my website is theredread.com. And I have evergreen classes for sale. I offer a thresholds course that was made to go in concert with Red Tarot that I offer a couple times a year, like maybe two times a year, depends. And I will soon be opening enrollment for TENS, which is a 2-year decanic walk with students where we go through the minor arcana, but we go through the decans. We walk together, and it's a beautiful container. Year one, we just learn the decans and in the way that the tarot becomes a calendar, right, astrologically. And then the second year, the students create something along, like they create their own Deccan material. I'm so excited. The work that my students created this last run was like stunning. And I can't wait for, I'm so excited for the projects that they created to like get into the world in a more significant manner. And then at the same time, we learned medieval Islamic timing techniques. So kind of building from that like foundational work into something larger.
Sounds so good.
Thank you. I love teaching. Teaching is really my passion. And so I'm typically always teaching something, you know. And then I offer consultations, of course, and I announce those monthly. So just subscribe to my Substack to be the first to know when.
Well, it's not every day that you get a teacher in, you know, the esoteric arts who literally has a master's degree in pedagogy. So I think we know where we need to sign up. So everyone, you can find that in the show notes. So all the links for that will be in the show notes. And Christopher, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Wow. Wasn't Christopher brilliant? I am so grateful we got a chance to hear what they had to say about the King of Wands. Don't forget to grab a copy of their brilliant, beautiful, amazing, must-have book, Red Tarot. And don't forget all the other fun things we have on offer. Jade's book, What a Time to Be Alive, and Brooke's book, Bargain Witch, and the book launch on October 14th. That's Tuesday. And that's a hot ticket for all you queer witches in Los Angeles. It's going to be the place to see and be seen. Carolyn's going to be performing. I'm going to be there. I'm going to do a little reading myself. So I hope you come out. And of course, my Winter Solstice Wisdom of the Crone Retreat, where we will be taking a deep dive into rituals of renewal and accessing our inner wisdom. All links in the show notes. Next time you hear from us, will be our last episode in this form as Between the Worlds. Carolyn and I will both be coming on to talk about our beloved Queen of Wands and what she's taught us about cultivating enchantment. Bittersweet, but mostly sweet. Because of all of you, our listeners, we love you so much. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for supporting us through the years. We cannot wait to high-five you next time we see you between the worlds. This podcast is hosted by Amanda Yates Garcia and produced by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs. Our icon was created by Maria Minnis, aka Tiny Parsnip, and our graphic design is by Leah Hayes. Thanks for flying with us.